Hola, Locamores. Diosa here from Locatora Radio.
Y Mala to talk classic telenovela tropes. More like our bedtime stories growing up, no?
Sí, those dramatic switched at birth dramas or evil stepmoms hiding the fact that you're really the boss storylines still bring the gasps.
Like Fabuloso brings the passion to cleaning with 2x concentrated formula to take the drama out of any mess.
I don't know about you, but when I smell Fabuloso's remarkable lavender scent in my casa, I know it's all going to be happily ever after.
Fabuloso's 2x concentrated formula provides 2x more active ingredients versus non-concentrated Fabuloso original. Use as directed.
Giselle was delicious to consume as a character. Of going from book one.
I don't like when you start using adjectives. It gets a little freaky.
Logan will always be remembered as one of my favorite fantasy characters. He just takes
right below Darrow, right?
No, I can't even fake it. No, I love Logan way more than Darrow. Welcome everyone to the Tudor Realm Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about The Last Argument of Kings, book 3 of the First Law Trilogy by Joe Abercrombie. As you can tell by my demeanor, I'm actually psyched about this book. This book was kick-ass. And as you can tell by the thumbnail...
No, I'm psyched. I'm psyched because I like to be around good, positive, rich energy or else I get really depressed.
Man, is that why you're depressed all the time?
I was a bit disappointed by the book. I was a bit disappointed.
And I'm a little disappointed in you.
I know. I'm that person at school who's like raising their hand going... Professor, actually, Shakespeare was pretty mid, you know, actually. So I'm going to try to turn that actually into, you know, expressing our thoughts here and going, yeah. Why am I right? Why are you wrong? That kind of thing.
Sure. But, no. It's why I'm right and why you are wrong.
Can I correct you on one thing? Mm. You know, the vast majority of people love this book in the ending.
Yeah, of course.
You agree with so many people.
I do.
That's usually a bad sign for you. Usually you like to go against the grain.
No. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with agreeing with the majority when the majority is right.
Yeah.
As long as they agree with me. It's not the other way around.
Ah.
You get what I mean? It's fine to accept the mob. It's not good to join the mob.
Right.
As long as the mob joins you on your side.
Be the shepherd.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm okay.
I stand corrected. So for everybody watching this, we should have said this earlier, but spoiler free for this book for the next 5 to 10 minutes, and then we'll spoil it. Not even.
Maybe
that, because we're at book 3. If you guys want to be convinced to read The Blade itself, the first one of the series, we have a review on that. We have a review on book 2, Before They Are Hanged. This is the third book.
We also have an older video pitching. Like I did a pitch of the First Law Trilogy, like,
back in the old days.
What? Over a year ago, at least.
So long.
Yeah.
Wow.
You could watch that. You don't have to, but you could.
I rewatched it just in prep, mm-hmm. and you did a good pitch job.
I did okay.
I was looking back thinking it would be a little cringy because you listen to your own voice, you look back at what you used to be.
Yeah.
You weren't bad.
I'll take that.
It was actually pretty decent.
Good.
Yeah. You're better now. I think we've improved in many ways.
But I would hope.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. So to catch people up, I'll do a quick spoiler-free recap of book 3, just leading us up to where did book 2 end off, okay? So where did book 2 end off for people who haven't read this in a while? It ends with a cyclical fashion for all of our different plots that are going on in book 2. One of them is Glockta down in the south in Dagoska. He is sent to Dagoska to save the city, which is... From the beginning, we're going, I don't know if he's going to be able to save the city, but he ends up doing a really good job. He delays the inevitable.
And still fails.
Still fails. Also, he was sent there to solve a murder mystery, ends up back in Ottawa to solve another murder mystery.
And failed his original mission. Like, Dagoska still falls. And so it ends up right where he started again, and also a failure.
Yes. And then we have a similar fashion with our Fellowship of Bastards, with your Baez, your Logan, your Pharaoh, Giselle, all of them are going to find this seed. They go to get the seed, go through all these shenanigans. Giselle gets his face cut. We see some cowardliness turn into maybe heroism. We see a lot of Pharaoh and...
Pharaoh and Logan, like...
Start...
They're boinking.
Yeah, they're boinking. Yeah. And then they go to the seed. The seed's not there. Fellowship failed.
And then they go back.
And we have Dogmen in the north Dogmen and Colonel West in the north. That story ends with three trees. Three trees ends up dead, sad. And then also Cahill, I believe her name was. Who there was a bit of a... Cahill. Cahill is the name, yes.
Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce it.
But that's pretty much fine. Where we are. That's where we are. And that brings us into book three. And from your perspective, Rich, I think the vast majority of people, when they're ranking these books, they go, book three is the best. Or book two. Some people say book two. They usually go 3-2-1, from what I've heard.
Yeah. For me personally, my favorite is still the first book. But I would go 1-3-2. Though, I'll be honest, like the scores are so close that it's a distinction without much of a difference. I put one as my favorite just because of a lot of certain moments in there and how it was structured really appealed to me.
Got it.
And especially that first read through, the emotional highs that I had there were, I still really haven't been topped.
But you still had a lot of emotional highs in this one.
Exactly. Okay. I still did. I was floored many times.
I think from, we had a small book club with the patrons here, kind of just a spontaneous one, and they seemed to like this one the best. People like Ryan, Vera, Jai Sadai, others, they were all saying, hey, lovely book. I think the vast majority, if you're going out and you're questioning, I don't know if I'm going to pick up book three, I'm going to listen to Tudor Ramble.
Wisdom of the Crowd says, continue on, which... if you've read book two, you're probably going to read book three.
And probably like it. Probably. Wisdom of Austin says he was a little disappointed and he'll try to his best to explain why. And he'll say, hey, Pitchforks, please, no, don't do this again.
No, we like the Pitchforks. That's why the thumbnail existed as it is.
Yeah.
We lean into it. We want the Pitchforks.
Yeah.
Because the Pitchforks bring YouTube views.
And YouTube views brings sense and sense.
It does.
So that I guess then, okay, your overall rating, then we could start spoiling this thing.
Yeah, I'll start us off.
What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I give it a 4.75 out of 5 stars.
Absolutely.
Really spectacular. Absolutely. Wow. I loved it.
Wow.
Now, what pathetic score did you give it?
Before you, okay, we've agreed on the name of the wind. We're agreeing on Mistborn.
Yeah.
The past two books of this, I thought The Blade itself was great. I thought Before They Are Hanged is so, so good. Yeah.
You are right. You agree with me. You agreeing with me on Name of the Wind, I need to give you grace. I need...
mercy!
Need to give you mercy because, honestly, us agreeing on that, almost every other opinion doesn't matter. I no longer care that you don't like Hyperion or the Wheel of Time.
I do like Hyperion.
You don't like it enough.
I don't like it enough. No.
You don't like it enough.
I think it's good. I do think it's good, but not.
But you don't love the Wheel of Time, but the fact that you hate the Name of the Wind, and every time we talk about it, you seem to hate it more.
No, it's lowered. My rating's lowered over time. Yeah.
I appreciate you so much more. You know what? I'll try and give you grace, but thing is.
Would you go so far to call me brother?
No.
Oh, okay.
You overstepped.
Stay in line.
Stay on your side. No, but the thing is, it's funnier when I'm mean and harsh. And
oh, so this one you're going to be a little nicer.
Okay. No promises, but I should. There we go.
Yeah.
I should be nicer to you, but will I? I don't know. I don't know if I'll live up to my own ideals.
You'll have to see what I say then. You'll have to react to it.
Yeah.
And then I think, so your case, loving this book, I guess for everybody watching, most people do love it. So for the few that are here going, they were disappointed by it, I'll try to represent you, okay? I'm here. You gave your rating. My rating is a 2.5 out of 5 stars. On our scale, that means disappointed. The big old D. Disappointed.
That's not going to go so well.
I can recognize there's things in here that, again, the characters are still great. And the prose is still super impressive. So I'd say those were my favorites for the book. What about you?
I mean, for me, it's still emotional impact and characters. With very close behind is plot.
Okay. I can see why, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So,
okay.
You want to get right into it?
Let's go. Category 10. So spoiler warning, time to click off if you don't want to be spoiled, but we are also going to do a better job for if you've read this a long time ago, we'll try to bring you in the scenes more and be like, hey, to give people more context. Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
What'd you give emotional impact out of 5 stars?
5 out of 5. I was floored. multiple times I was floored in this book. I was emotionally connected to the character. Some of these scenes just got me out loud, like just cheering. The big cheering scene for me would probably be Logan versus the
Ferris the Feared.
Ferris the Feared, yeah. Where the duel, which one. I love the John Wick type setup of people that don't know he's the badass and then like finding out from the people around going like, oh my God, who? Logan Nine Fingers? Like, it's great. So you see Colonel West in the shield wall around the gladiatorial going like, oh my God, Logan's fighting that thing? And then seeing the Bloody Nine come out and the Bloody Nine almost losing. Mm-hmm. And then finally taking down Ferris the Feared in the most brutal, visceral way possible. With absolutely spectacular. One of the best fight scenes I've ever read, period. Dang. Like, that's how you write a fight scene. You want that.
Writing's phenomenal, yeah.
So I was floored with that fight. Mm. I was also, so that fight scene, I think, is the biggest.
Oh, you gave 5-star for this category?
Or, yes.
Yeah, wow, okay.
Because that's specifically a plot moment, but a lot of the, but plot and writing, it's more of the fight itself was just super exciting.
Yeah.
But there were also plenty of other character moments that floored me. Specifically, the reveal of Bethod, where we finally get to see Bethod's side of things. Mm-hmm. I should have seen it coming, but it floored me. Of Logan Nine Fingers finally, like, he beat Ferris the Feared. He's going to confront Bethod, get his revenge, confront his old enemy. And basically, Bethod reveals, like, what the hell, Logan? What do you want me to do? I kept trying to stop you. I kept trying to just end the war and, like, consolidate the power that we've already gotten. But you kept killing people. And I tried to negotiate with one of our enemies. And then you killed their son. What the hell? You blame me? How the hell should I be blamed for this? Yeah. You're the one that pushed me into all these conflicts. And you realize he's kind of right. Mm-hmm. It is Logan's fault. And Bethod was just kind of trying to contain Logan and then kills Bethod, becomes king. Like, that floored me, that kind of reveal, which it made sense of this world and I didn't see it coming. Mm. I think everything with Baez and the reveals, which we'll talk about later. I don't want to get into the specifics of it, but that wowed me emotionally. I was floored with the relationship between Glockta and Ardy. Mm. I was so emotionally invested by the end of it. I thought it, especially the ending scene with them, it may have moved a tear. It maybe have. Wow. I loved it. Wow. Everything with Colonel West and him dealing with the, basically everything that he's regretting and basically him becoming the hero by the end and becoming a very, very good colonel. Then I was emotionally invested in...
Giselle
was delicious to consume as a character of going from book one.
I don't like when you start using adjectives. It gets a little freaky. I don't like it.
Book one, I love to hate him. Book two, oh my God, there's hope. He's going on a character journey. Wonderful. And then book three, the failure of redemption. Mm-hmm. And just the absolute tragedy of Giselle. That was wonderful to experience. And there were plenty of others, but I think those were the big highlights for me of what emotionally floored me. What did you give emotional impact?
A 1-star. No. I just feel like I have to balance your 5-star now. But
see, that, I just had to weigh it on you because I gave it a 5.
You got to say, like, you loved it so much. It's
I amazing. Loved it. Yeah. No, I'm probably even missing stuff, but that's the stuff that got me to exclaim out loud that I was absolutely floored.
I mean, to add on to your emotional impact so I'll give my score right after this, but the fight scene that lasts so many pages where you get the back and forth pacing between Giselle, then West, then Logan, and each of their lines ends with the previous line. Yeah. That kind of cool pattern and just going, you're right into the action and Glockta's going underground while you have with Giselle, but so it was, yeah, even the pacing of it was good.
It was exciting.
So I gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars. Disappointing, which reflects my overall score as well.
Yeah.
Now, for me, I had this conversation with my friend of how much do endings factor in how much emotionally invested you are in a book or in a series. And I found out after reading this a lot.
Interesting.
Quite a lot. Because I enjoyed those moments quite a bit too, that the fight scenes and that. I enjoyed following these characters the whole time. There's a couple things in this that I think plummeted my emotional investment. Because already in book one and book two, I was not a biggest fan of the world. I thought the world's serviceable. It's a vehicle. You know, I'm not reading it for that. You know, the plot's serviceable. Not reading it for that. By this, the plot comes together and the whole bias stuff, which we'll talk about. But for me, I guess the first 80% of the book we'll talk about the rest of this podcast.
Okay.
We'll get to it. But where my emotion comes from is that last 5%. The ending to me, I'll give two things of where, three things, probably 10 things. The first thing is just my personal preference of endings that I prefer. If you have three types of endings, the ones I love the most are bittersweet endings. I love when something is bitter, but sweet. I love when something goes wrong, but there's a dash of hope or there's a dash of something. That's my favorite. Then I will go sweet endings. You know, your Pixar films. Your coming of age story is just sweet. And then lastly, I'd say your cyberpunk, your just bitter endings. The ones that can be overly bitter. Now, I'll say what some patrons said too. There's dash of hope. There's hopeful parts in this book.
There's some sweet, but it's mostly bitter.
So if I'm giving the scale of I ended the book just feeling bitter and just going, I guess these are also very well acclaimed movies like Taxi Driver and Joker for movie examples where they just kind of have that cynical feel to it. And I don't like those kind of stories that just end in a cynical feel. So that's one thing, just preference wise of emotionally, I'm going, man, what's there to grasp onto? I'd read books and enjoyment for a bit of a different thing. I want a little bit more touch of light. That being said, some of my favorite books and films, I guess one we could say American Gods, not to spoil American Gods, but you were saying with that book, it's more of a kind of nihilistic in a way. And I felt a little differently about it, but it ended a way, even though it was cyclical in a sense, and there were some things to it, there was something for me to grasp onto. So not to just focus in on cynical equals bad or overly cynical equals bad. There's aspects I can love, but sometimes when there's something cynical, I like to have something else I can latch onto. So that's just the ending of the book. I just left going, okay. And I think doubly so, the reason it really got to me, I think even more so in the book three, the end of the trilogy, where all my emotional weight went into this, was I feel like I had the same emotion, and I really liked book two. I had the same feeling of book two. Since book two ended in that cyclical fashion for all the plots and the characters kind of, you know, they started to go on an arc. No, it didn't end with your Giselle almost having your character arc, then it being taken away. But I felt like I left book two getting the message and getting all the things like, okay, I see what you're doing, Abercrombie. Cool. Now what's your finale to this? What's the overall, what are you trying to pull me and make me feel? And I felt like I just had the same thing happen to me. And I'll say, I mean, we refer to this man all the time. This who knows if he's a man? Maybe he's an old man. He's been, who knows? Levy. Levy from our Patreon. He said this, and it sums up my thoughts exactly how I emotionally feel. So, Levy, Levy's the contrarian. So, you know, any book that you don't like, you got Levy to defend you. Okay. Yeah. So, this is what he said. He said, the first Law trilogy, and by the way, to put this in, it's on this book specifically for me. So the trilogy in general, I still enjoyed book one and two. But the first Law trilogy so hard tries to subvert fantasy tropes that it ends up trapped by the very conventions it mocks. In rejecting traditional heroes, redemption arcs, and clear morality, it offers grim, cynical characters and bleak outcomes. But the relentless focus on nihilism, we'll talk about that later, becomes predictable in its own way. While it criticizes genre cliches, it still relies on them, using familiar archetypes, the barbarian, the wizard, soldier, just in darker shades. When you position yourself as the opposite thing, you are just as much defined by the thing as people who are aligned to it. The trilogy defines itself more by what it refuses to be than what it is, making it feel like a reaction to fantasy rather than a fully independent work. So there's parts of that I really agree with the whole, if you subvert too much, the subversion's expected. And I just expected this. I expected a lot of the subversion because we got that in book two. But also, I guess the touch of feeling that I got at the end as well, I got a bit of Game of Thrones season 8 vibes, where it's like, hey, Jaime, I got a bit of vibe.
That's harsh.
It's harsh.
That's real harsh.
I'm trying to defend why it's my low rating.
Game of Thrones season 6, not season 8.
Here's what the season 8.
Come on.
Here's the portion I got. The one portion that I'll get off my podium, okay? And I see it's because it's the message of this book, but I got a little bit of the feeling of like, hey, you thought we were going to give you a character arc. You thought we were going to give you like something to grab. Jamie, you thought Jamie was going to do this, but no, I'm going to subvert for the sake of the subversion itself. It was properly built up. It's not as bad as Game of Thrones season 8. I recognize that. It's just a little bit of thing of what it comes down to is the answers to why the characters end up in themselves, which we'll talk about in the character section, of what were their motivations. And I found their motivations a lot less interesting than what my head came up with before getting to the ending, when it came to Glockta, when it came to Baez. So a lot of it was the unsatisfactory motivation behind the characters that led to the cynical ending. So
character-wise,
there we go.
I'd actually I completely disagree with you character-wise in the sense of, like, it's more of a rug pull, because I think it does make just so much more sense. I think Giselle's it's not even a lack of a character arc. It's a failed character arc.
Failed hero's journey.
Which is very different from, it's a character where Jaime Lannister's like, there is a hero's journey, and then for some reason, the 11th hour, it's pulled. Versus Giselle, it makes so much sense. No, it's properly set up in a way of why he fails. Same thing with Logan, of all the reveals that come out of it make complete sense for everything set up for book one, where you realize how much of a monster he really is, and yet has this, we've only been seeing his more positive sides for the entire trilogy. So when we get around to it, it's been there all along.
Yeah.
So when you see him basically being ousted again and now on his own, basically back to book one, literally falling into the river again, it makes sense of just because you're trying
to clarify,
be
I'm not saying it doesn't make sense at all. I'm not saying
the main problem with season 8 is that the failed character arcs don't make sense, because everything was set up for one thing and then subversion, you didn't see this coming. I think you do see this coming. You can see this coming.
That's what my complaint is because it's subversion for the sake of, like, I think this whole thing is focused on the anti-Lord of the Rings, and often it's so subversive that I'm going, it's not fun anymore, because I'm kind of going, okay, I get that it's the anti-Lord of the Rings. I guess a lot of people see this as not just grim dark, but there's some light versions of this. Like some people see...
It's pretty funny.
Pretty funny, yeah. Why I use the extreme example of Game of Thrones season 8 of, season 8 is just nonsense, but with this, it makes sense. It is properly set up, yeah.
Is the problem with this being the antithesis to Lord of the Rings, is the problem that it's predictable in its character arcs? Is that your issue with it, why it's disappointing?
I think it comes from the fact that book 2 ended in a way that made me feel exactly how book 3 ended. So book 2 and 3 had the same value. And so book 3 ended in the same place. They're in literal different places. But the cyclical ending I just got. So I could have ended book 2 and gotten a bit of that message. I guess he could have put some of that stuff, their character coming up and down in book 2, made that, maybe make it one book, and I would have liked it much more, because it ended in a point that didn't repeat the same things that I felt in the second book.
Would it make more sense then for, if this would be the anti-Lord of the Rings, it would made book 3 would have hit better if book 2 ended on a more positive note?
Oh, absolutely.
Book 2 ended with hope.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, hey, look, the heroes are winning. We've actually succeeded. Look at this. And then it all falls apart.
Oh, I think I would have loved the ending.
Yeah,
I think I would have loved it. Because I think when the rug pulls under you and you get that, it's more, I think it would have hit the more unexpected. I would have been more unexpected and not felt like it was using the same trick. Mm. Because I felt like I've already been dealt with that. I already dealt with that. You already gave me that.
Gotcha.
So why read the next one? So a lot of So I'm focused on the ending, because even though I enjoyed a lot of this, I did enjoy a lot the fight scenes you're talking about, and just Giselle becoming king, and the throne room scene is so tense, and you're seeing, I love it. I love those parts of it. But again, that conversation about how much credit do I give to the ending of a book? If the ending's not here, I'm saying good things about this book. I'm just so disappointed by how it leaves me. on that. I'm just so disappointed how it leaves me.
I guess my emotion from it is I'm also like, I feel left wanting. I feel like I've been stabbed, but I like it. It's more like this book hurt me.
Yeah.
But I like the pain a little bit.
A little like masochism.
In this, that's what this book made me. It's like sometimes I'm a book masochist. That's all I'm saying.
I see it because...
Because there were so many endings where I'm so sad that Pharaoh and Logan don't, like, work out their differences. Right. Of, like, there seems to actually be a genuine connection between them, and they could each help each other. And it seems very easy if both want... Like, their paths could go on the same side. All Logan has to do is say... Because he doesn't want to go back to the North.
Yeah.
He could tell... And Pharaoh doesn't really want to be alone anymore. Yeah. Like, she sees the positive of being with someone else. All Logan has to do is, I'll help you fight the Gurkish. I'll go with you. So that way he can leave his past behind and go fight. That's the happy ending that could be there, but doesn't, because they're both stubborn and not willing to talk. Ah, good.
Yeah.
Good masochism, basically. Yeah. That happens
and
frequently.
A way of making you feel sad, and that's the purpose of this too. If it makes you feel sad, if it makes you feel depressed at the end, cynical, like, oh, it could have been. That's a 5-star for like,
Giselle.
That floors you.
Giselle makes me go like, oh, he what could have been.
Yes.
I love the moment where Giselle, like now King, is asking Logan, like, you're the best man I know,
yeah.
And oh, so good. It's so great. Because, it's somehow, like, Logan is... Some parts of him do make him a great leader, but now with the context we've seen how he went with Bethod and how he basically pushed the whole war himself.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. What a tragic line to say. It's the it's just the self-betrayal and how Logan must feel to hear that coming from him and how much of a lie it really is. Great. So many of those things were deliciously mean and hurt.
Right.
That's why the emotion's so high, even though all the things you said, completely true.
Yeah, well, I guess you're taking it and you're going, man, all those things that it seeks you wanting, you're at the end feeling this, oh, what could have been?
Mm-hmm.
And that it just, he makes you feel and pulls that from you in a way that makes you just feel the what, not just the what could have been, but you want to read another book seeing, man, I hope that I get to see another, I hope I get to see Glockton already work out or whatever happens with
thing
them.
Is, it's the one thing that like probably
positive.
Would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which it's, oh, that was such a heartwarming scene of, to give context of Glockta waking up, soiling himself and muscles all tied up where he's having a spasm attack. He can't get up, and Artie comes in to help him get ready for the morning and clean up after him. And he's just so embarrassed. He's like, "No, leave. Like, get the assistant. Like, don't. I don't want you to see me like this." And her insistence of like, "No, like, I want to help someone. I don't want to be a burden, useless, like where no one needs me. Like, you need me, and I want that. I want to be needed."
They probably had the happiest ending of anybody. Yeah.
Oh, God, it was such a great... It's so touching.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they probably will work out pretty well together, it's like, yeah, lovely. So, wonderful ending for them. I like how the actual literal torturer, who objectively may be the worst person of the three, roughly, Logan's killed a lot more people. But
he's trying, but then he fails.
But also... How much of it is the mystical, like, the Bloody Nine? Is that him? Is it a demon possession? Like, what exactly is it? Is that his fault? Doesn't seem like it's entirely conscious, but Glockta is, like, consciously not good.
Yeah. So what encapsulates for you, you're left with the book, and what emotion would you say that, what adjective sticks out to you at the end that you feel deep down? Maybe you can cheat and use a couple adjectives.
Sure. If I get one, I would say
longing.
Longing's good, but I think just bitter.
Okay.
That's it's not bittersweet. It's just bitter.
And so you like it and I dislike it for the same reason.
I like sea salt and vinegar chips.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that explains
it. I like it when I get coddled. Like, here's a good little story. So, I guess more of our emotion will come as we go through the rest of the category. Yeah. So, what did you give thought-provokingness, the messages and themes? What would you give that out of 5 stars?
I give this one a 4.25. I think it's really great.
I gave it 2.25. Very disappointed. Which I guess you could see where
that
comes
from.
Let's
start you off. Why were you really disappointed with it?
First, should we say, like, what is the message of the book? Right. So there's a couple things to go over where I have a quote, and Joe Abercrombie quotes at the end from Elizabeth Maddox Roberts saying, "Does the devil know he is the devil?" And then another quote where this is Joe Abercrombie now, "Truly, life is the misery we endure between disappointments." And another Glock the quote, "First it is done to us, then we do it to others, then we order it done, such is the way of things." Now, it's very clear. I don't think there's any disagreements about what the book's going for is the cyclicalness. The fact that Baez before controlled us all, will control it again. And to give context to the scene, if people haven't read it in a while, where Baez was the puppet, he was the master behind all these puppets here. He started the union. He was gone for a bit, 40 years or so, and things got a little rampant, and some of the inner council started to have more liberty, but he wasn't paying attention. Saved Jizal as a kid because just as a safety measure, Jizal was a bastard.
But he also had several others.
And several others where he had Logan who could talk to the spirits and Glockta. So he had all these people he was placing around. And in the end, Glockta now works for Baez. Are we both in agreement that it's going for the cyclical nature of things?
Baez is the ultimate villain of the story.
Absolutely.
He quite literally started it all and most of it under petty rivalry and a disagreement he's the bad guy ultimately.
Yes. Okay. So it's going for that.
Yeah. It's
there's something else you got out of it too, just to see what makes you think on it.
I think a lot of it talks about, can you escape the past? Can you escape your past?
Yeah.
Cause each character I think deals with that in a different way, with talking smaller potatoes with, Colonel West, can he escape his past, both as a peasant, not, you know, a lower class man? Can he escape his station in life and with merit to be able to become a high general and all these things?
Yeah,
possibly, but there's barriers in the way. Can he escape his abuse toward his sister? Can he escape his violent ragefulness of how he killed the Prince Ladislaw? And what can you escape part of yourself, and do your sins catch up to you? Then that's a smaller scale of it. But then you have Logan, which is probably the most obvious of, no matter how good or how, no matter how much Logan says that he wants to change, and to some degree he can be, even if you've done some changes, other people don't immediately see you that way. Mm-hmm. And ultimately you can't escape the opinions of other people who, like, he killed several of their friends. Like, there's no way he's getting
and
that
even
back.
With the best of intentions, people still don't change. Even if you're well-intended, it can still end up in a complete failure.
Exactly. So not only does he not completely change, it's even if he does change, how do other people see him?
Yep.
Like, Black Dow is, like, always going to, even if Logan didn't kill Tull, Black Dow probably would still portray as, like, absolutely not. I've seen you kill way too many. I've seen what you do. Not giving you that chance again.
Yep.
Then you have Glockta, the cycle of violence of being tortured, turned torturer, to now he orders the tortures done.
Yep.
It's what he talks about. So the cycle of violence and escaping your own past.
Yep.
Almost none of them do. So that's the nature of it. It's a grim view of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't completely agree with it, but it's more of I think this is a more realistic story. Like, the people are kind of have inertia, and it takes a lot to overcome inertia. Mm-hmm. And I think this book more exemplifies, like, 9 times out of 10, if you don't, it takes tremendous effort to change the path that you're going on. And most of the time you don't. but maybe the next time they will. So that's the kind of hope that I have on it. If like this time it didn't work, maybe next time.
Got it. And is that when it comes down to that message, then you thought, since you thought it was really great, I agree with you. The theme here doesn't diverge. It's every single point of view follows the same theme.
Yeah.
There's not, I don't think Abercrombie here is trying to go for many different things. It all encompasses this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
For the most part. Yeah. Because there was on our Patreon, there was a large discussion about, hey, is this book nihilistic? Is it existentialist? Is it just realist? What do you think it is? Or what do you think the, maybe not philosophy, but what do you think is cynical just the best word to use?
Pessimistic?
Pessimistic, is that the best word to use?
Because nihilistic is more nothing matters. And I think this book does say a lot of things matter.
To them.
So it's not a book of, oh, nothing matters. A lot of things matter. But your past matters. And that your history, can it be overcome? Can you get past your past? Can you get past your mistakes?
Mm-hmm.
Or past choices, really, not mistakes.
Right.
This book says no. Like Baez.
Yeah.
What did he do to his first love interest? Did he kill her? Probably did. But like, what exactly happened there? And clearly one of his biggest regrets in his life, like constantly is anguishing over, and is still the prime source of conflict to the books that we get today.
Yeah.
Can he overcome that?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem so. Keeps happening. So I don't know.
So then what's your final conclusion on it then? It's just pessimistic.
Pessimistic nature of escaping your past.
Got it. Yeah, I think so too, because I have some thoughts from our patrons who definitely I want to read off here and give their thoughts. But there's a whole thing about, is it nihilistic? Is it existentialist? What is it going for? And yeah, this book doesn't say there is no meaning, actually. Maybe it's a really sad view of existentialism, which is just, hey, meaning is what you make of it and what they make of it. Glockta's meaning is, well, what I make of it is I do it for my own amusement. Or what I make of it is I, or whatever the character, take whichever character, and then we'll explore that in the character section. So here's some thoughts from, this is from Vera, patron Vera, also booktuber Vera, go check her out.
Yeah.
And so Vera had this to say. She said, I find this portrayal of humanity to be very true to my experience of it. At its heart, it is how hard it is for people to change and how we are restricted by the systems in which we live. I do not find the book hopeful, but I do think there are elements of hope in it. This makes me interpret it as a bittersweet, and that the quality makes it a comfort read for me. The idea that once I recognize the limits of my situation, I'll know how to work within these confines to make my life better, kind of like Glockta does, in my opinion. That's her saying that. And I love the characters, especially my beloved Giselle. I love the existential take on fantasy because to me it felt more honest and real, perhaps because Abercrombie loves to research his past, has a psychology degree, and his father is a published sociologist. I find art that contains something that transcends the confines of its story beautiful. This story is beautiful to me. So I think those conclusions there, she's also agreeing with you on the message. I mean, the message is very clear. She's agreeing with you that people try to change, but they don't change in the end. And she did find some elements of hope in it and said had some bittersweet moments. I think she's referring a lot to like Glockta and Artie, which maybe is your most uplifting part of the book as well.
He's definitely uplifting part of the book, where I think every other character, though I guess Colonel West in many ways is pretty positive of how much he's changed, and ultimately he did die at the end, but think of all the stuff he's done for his country, for Artie specifically.
And
he did do good, despite his flaws. Because he wasn't completely, he's not an irredeemable person.
Got it. Right. And just to give, okay, so my thoughts on the message of this, where again, when saying very disappointed in this, I can't say it's wrong or it's flawed or it's bad. No, I can't say that there's something wrong with it. But my one word, why Thought Provoking didn't get to me, happy. I'm very happy in life. Things are like, I love life. You know, things are great. I'm an optimist at heart. Yeah. And there is value in reading something that not just disagree with, maybe doesn't emotionally connect with you as much. There's tons of value in that. And I think for me, not to repeat myself from the emotional impact, but because I got the message from book two, this didn't add any value to me. from the previous book. And when I leave it and I think back to this, of how much will I think about this and its themes, I hate to say this because I hate when other people who have read more than me and seen more than me say this, but like I've seen the cyclical nature thing done before. I've seen it, and I've seen it done in shorter form in movies and other books that have just, I've seen the cyclical nature, and it's done it really well. And I guess Joe Abercrombie did it twice to me. I was tired of it the second time, and I thought, you know what? I see the point of this. That's great for other people that can connect. And I think, like Vera said too, that's how her experience of humanity, and it really connected mm-hmm. with her. My experience of humanity is a little different, so maybe it's because of that. And I refuse to see some of the absolute grimness. And I just think it's more true to be, I think bittersweet is more truthful because life is bittersweet.
I do want to point out,
yeah.
I disagree with Vera and also the message, Joe, like the message of the book. Mm. I also don't see it as, I don't Hopefully. Look at the world that way either.
Yeah.
I also say, like, for the most part, people do, I liked exploring that yes. message and worldview, but I don't agree with it. I am also not.
Totally understand. Yeah.
You get it? Like, it's just because you could enjoy someone else's message and worldview doesn't mean you agree with it.
Exactly my point where I love reading things that are outside my experience or makes me think about something I've never thought about or I disagree mm-hmm. with. And so I think for this, the experience of it, I guess my feelings of how of him, maybe this is it. I think this pinpoints it of this is portrayed as a real, very real, realistic. And Logan Nine Fingers talking about you have to be realistic about these things. And kind of his point of life of being realistic is things end up in a cycle. Things just turn out like that. And I think I just more disagree with the message that the most real thing is a mostly grim or bitter end. I think bittersweet endings. I think there is no bitter without sweet in life. It just encapsulates life more to me. And I think that since the emphasis was on this being realistic, I don't see that as my reality. I don't see it as a general reality. So
I'll pass something over to you then.
Yeah.
I actually see this as realistic if that's your mentality. A mm-hmm. lot of these characters is a self-fulfilling prophecy. The fact that Logan does say you have to be realistic about these things, he is compromising on himself. Like, of course that's where he's going to go. Like, all of these characters
mm-hmm.
don't believe that they can truly change. And because they don't believe it, they don't.
Right.
That's ultimately it. If any of these characters really did believe they could change, I think they could.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't believe it, and so they don't. In that way, it is realistic. I've met other people that believe, like, yes, because of my circumstances, I can't change. And that my lot in life is exclusively, like, yeah. My circumstances define who I am. Yeah. And I can never change. Like, yeah, of course, those people that believe that.
Doomed to fail. Self-fulfilling prophecy, you're going to fail in the end.
In that case, this is realistic to that point. Because we don't really have a character that truly does believe they can change.
Mm.
And then they don't. Like, that's not the message it's going for. It's the people that don't believe it.
Right. It's that if everybody's a cynic, you're going to end a cynical end.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point, because I think with having every character not believe in themselves, they're going to end up
it would be a very different message of if Joe wrote a character that was really positive or trying to change.
Oh, yeah.
And ultimately did believe they could and then didn't.
Mm.
That would be unrealistic, I think.
Of them trying to change and then didn't?
No, to the point of they believe that they can change. Mm-hmm. And that true belief in trying to...
I think they did, though. Point was that characters in here did believe they could change, like Giselle. And then, even though he believed he could, I think it was less so... This is why... I guess this is my disagreement on your point, mm-hmm. where I think the other point of it is not just you yourself could believe you want to change, because Giselle does believe he can change. I think with all of his heart, he wants to and is making those grounds to. But the world itself, Baez, is above our control. Like, whatever the handmaker, the clock is above there, that's putting the force down. No matter how much you want to, an outside force will make sure life hits you in the face. Life is real. It's kind of saying life will hit you in the face, not just that these characters want to, but no matter how much you want to, because I think the point is where this failed here, the failed hero arc is that maybe if they stayed flat and never believed they could change, and then that would be the real message. But no, all these characters look like they can change. They can't. Oh my God, will Giselle have courage? But no, in the end, life is just going to hit you in the face. And
yeah,
that. So I think more so for me, it's the message about the world, the outside these characters is that's how life is. And I see the value in that of like a message for people of like, yeah, life can be very hard. I just don't see that as an eternal truth. I don't see that as true. So I just, as the message goes, just disappoints me because I see life as something else other than that. Just being more hopeful in general. So it's really just a message that I think can connect with some people. And I think it can, people on Patreon, Donovan, he left reading this book depressed for several weeks. He was like, oh my God. So it can, if it emotionally connects with you, it makes you feel that way. I totally see it. But the message to me won't be something I ever look to and I'm inspired by, and doesn't have to inspire you. It won't be something I even look back to and look to not repeat. Because you could look at a message and go, hey, look, here's Dune, where it's saying, don't follow the messianic figure. Don't follow that. Yeah. You could look at something to not follow that example, but I won't even look back at this to go like, oh, Rally's going to
like me in Name of the Wind.
Precisely.
I look back at that and go, oh, the key example of what not to do in life. Quote.
Exactly. So when you look back to Name of the Wind and I look back to Name of the Wind, I go like, oh, that's a bad message for me.
If
so,
I did the opposite of everything Quoth does,
happy life.
I'd be in a good place.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not to that extreme because Name of the Wind is an atrocious message. This is just something that disappointed me. So there's a difference.
I get you.
So I think, wow, this is going to be strap in, boys and girls. We're still going.
Oh, Lord.
We're going next category. Okay, next category. Oh, wait. I got one more thing. I bolded this and put it in caps in my notes so that...
And you almost passed it over.
I'm going to try to... This is the only time I'll try to convince you to lower it by 0.25, okay?
You can try.
Giselle, the whole thing that happens with Giselle, his whole lesson is that monarchy is cringe.
Does he learn that?
I think, listen, hear me out. He becomes monarch. Is it all what it lived up to be? Monarchy is cringe.
No, bad monarchy is cringe.
Oh, so you were for the good monarchy.
If he was a good king, it would be great. But he's a weak man.
No, I think he shows that. You know what? I would just want to be a...
It's a fake monarchy. It's not even a real monarchy.
Oh, okay. It's not real socialism or communism. It's not.
It's literally Baez. It's literally the monarch, like King Giselle going, what if hospital? And Baez going, no, quiet down there. Shush.
Well, then,
shush, good
king. Hold on. Then Baez is your monarch in the end.
Oh, basically, yes.
So monarchy, Baez is cringe. He's bad.
Is Baez the good guy now?
I think so.
I
think this is changing your mind. I don't know. I had to mention it because it doesn't put monarchy in a good light. I'm just saying.
What is it a good light, this book? It doesn't put any aspect of any character in any way.
Including monarchy.
Including monarchy.
So think about it. Think about it.
I will, like, fair enough. But no, still 4.25.
Okay, you got to stick with it, okay?
Because, look. It's the fact that Giselle isn't really a king. He's a fake king.
So Baez
the
monarch, is a king.
But is he a king? He's more just the manipulator. Like, the aspect of a king is not just the person in control. That's not what makes a king. King is normally a noble position that is out front in front of the people. He's a behind-the-scenes manipulator. That doesn't make a king. You can't have a king behind the curtain. That's not a king.
I think that is. I mean, it's the one the king answers to. That's higher than the king.
But that's not a king. Do you understand that, like, a king is a certain
The king is
position.
Just the show, you're saying. It's just the crown and the robe, and then behind closed doors.
There is a difference between a person in power and a monarch. Those are two separate things. That's why you can have a dictator and a monarch. Different things.
All right, technically is a family of the royal court. Okay, I'll give you that.
There's actually, I'll give you that. It's more of an out... I don't think you can be a secret king. Do you know what I mean?
I see what you mean.
But, it's a position.
Okay, at the very least, Giselle. Cringe. Cringe king.
Ah, you're hurting me.
I'm just... you can't deny he's a cringe king. You got to take...
He's a cringe false king. Yes.
See?
Yeah.
See?
The monarchy has failed in this book.
Okay.
The monarchy
has
failed.
That's all I wanted you to say. Okay. That's it. Moving on. Okay. I just wanted one book example where you see, look, monarchies aren't all perfect.
Monarchies aren't perfect in the world of First Law.
No.
Okay. No, they are not.
What did you give characters out of 5 stars?
Five.
Five floored you.
Floored. We're talking about all these characters, and they... Yes. Yeah, they all floored me. I loved them all.
This one I gave 4 stars. Great.
Okay. Yeah. At least...
This character's still great. Yeah.
Which do you think is your favorite? Of the big three Giselle, Logan,
Giselle.
And... Really?
Giselle. Easy.
Not Glockta? No. Most people put like Glockta up top.
Glockta's really great too, but I think Giselle for me... before we say that too, I want to make a point about all what happens with all these characters and then kind of dissect them and ask you about them because I heard this from somebody. Somebody said this, not me, but that the characters in this book, why it's a failed hero's journey, is that...
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Anyone growing up in a Latino home can tell you all about the telenovela where the girl from the barrio won the heart of the rich boy or the beautiful yet quiet girl next door who is taken aback by the love of a handsome leading man. ¡Viva las telenovelas! Hola, mi gente. Rosalind Sanchez here from He Said, Ella Dijo. And although I like drama in my telenovelas, when it comes to real life, I prefer a drama-free casa. In fact, the passion I put into cleaning rivals the greatest soap operas, thanks to Fabuloso. Its remarkable lavender scent lingers like a longing glance, and with 2 times more active ingredients to take the drama out of any mess, you'll be shouting, gracias. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Fabuloso's 2x concentrated formula provides 2x more active cleaning ingredients versus non-concentrated Fabuloso original. Use as directed.
Each character gets what they want, but not what they need. Each character fulfills their wants. And Pharaoh wants revenge.
She got
gets
it.
Revenge. What she needed was... to realize revenge is fruitless and you needed
but not
to
even
actually
that, just because
learn to trust, like, hey, trust others and things like that. Yeah. And then you have Giselle who wanted to be courageous.
Wanted respect.
Yeah.
He wanted the adoration of others. Mm.
And he needed to learn to have courage, but in the end he was a coward.
Courage and humility.
Mm-hmm. But he got the things, he technically got it, the power and the status, but in the end, so we can go down all of those, and they all typically get what they wanted, but not what they needed to learn. So for the characters, I thought that was great.
Except Glockta. Glockta did, by the end, kind of get what he needed, is someone to actually confide in that needs him as much as he needs them.
Almost. I felt like his need... could have also been he needed to lose. Because he always wanted to win. His motivation was, you know, why do I keep doing this? I'm not a loser. I'm a winner. And he's continuing that cycle by just wanting, now he's higher up in the echelon, continuing the same things of his wants. He wants to keep climbing to the top. In the hero's journey, in the need, he would have learned failure. He would have learned, like, oh, I actually lost this time. I think a good ending, a hero's journey for him would have been death. So, he again.
Or finding a way out, like losing with grace that allows him to keep his life. Realizing that there are things that are more important than winning.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
Which I think he does kind of find with Artie. To some degree. There's a lot more than the other characters. He needs is. He doesn't know how to open up to other people, and he's a manipulator. He doesn't know how to. He has a real trouble with being vulnerable with someone else.
Yeah,
and always having to have, like, he can be, but he has to have a knife to them. He has to have a knife to their throat, and have something over on them. and he lets Artie in. And so he now need, they both need each other. And it's a vulnerable place for him. So he does get that, and it's something he did need.
Yeah.
So
it has, there's aspects of it, but in general, would you agree with that statement that the characters get what they want,
but
they don't
get
their need?
Yeah.
It's, I think it's very cool to see. And you asked my favorite character, I think why it's Giselle specifically, is for some reason throughout all of these books, his inner monologue and his inner monologue, even more so than Glock does, is the most volatile. I think the fact how much he teeters his totter, check out our merch. So do we have it? Oh, yeah, right there.
I was having coffee on our first couple takes.
Yeah. There's some coffee.
There we go. Yeah. Self-promotion done.
So Giselle, because he's so volatile, because he teeters his own totter, yeah. I'm just going, man, what is he going to, what situation is he going to put himself in next? And the way he thinks about his own image puts him in both a love situation with him and Artie and him and the monarchy in a way that he could have an outburst and start screaming like, no, I'm your king, you close conscience. Shut. He can have an explosive moment where it totally makes sense with his character and creates for more conflict and tension because I just don't know what Giselle's going to do. And I was most invested in his character in that way. But for you, is it Logan?
It is Logan.
It had to be Logan.
It is. Yeah. I loved Logan. Logan will always be remembered. One of my favorite fantasy characters. He just takes...
Right below Darrow, right?
No, I can't even fake it. No, I love Logan way more than Darrow. Absolutely.
Darrow on top, by the way. I really hope Nick zooms
Logan
in on your
literally,
face you made right there.
Yeah. Logan checks every single box that I want in a fantasy character.
Retired badass.
Yeah,
that's it. That's it.
No, I mean, the retired badass, the I like a failed redemption, the charismatic leader, the stoic nature, but it's all there. It's all there. I loved it. I love his character.
Mm.
And it's so tragic to see him go. And I want to see more of him. I was immediately after this book, I was like, is there like a short story with Logan? And like, is he in any other books? And so we'll see. Right. I have no idea if he survives or not, but I won't spoil things.
Okay. Don't spoil things.
Actually, I can't spoil things. I have
you have
idea.
Not read on at all. So
I've read Best Served Cold.
Other than that, we'll be reading these books together.
Yes.
I'm not going to stop with Joe Abercrombie. I think his character work and his prose is enough to keep me really trusting him. So
actually, I think you're really going to like Best Served Cold.
Okay. Neat.
I think it addresses a couple of your issues. Of it's a mix.
Lovely.
It's not.
Lovely.
You get a little bit of a salad. You get a little mixed.
I like salads. Yeah.
It's not all grapes in your fruit salad. It's a little bit of watermelon. A little bit of oranges there. Yeah.
When you're just trying to continue the analogy, dragon fruit.
Yeah, you have dragon fruit in your fruit salad.
Yeah, so with all these characters, would you say there's one that didn't land as much for you, your least favorite? Maybe we have the same?
If I had to pick, the Dogman.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
I like him quite a bit.
Yeah, I think I'd agree.
Overall, it's not the most compelling. What's compelling about his POV is the plot around him. And I love the Northmen in general and seeing the Northmen culture. Like, seeing the crew is great. And seeing how the savage Northmen interact with the supposedly more civilized union, that's always great to see.
Yep.
But the Dogman himself, overall, like, would it be argued that he's probably the best character in terms of
moral-ish?
Like, he's not particularly...
Three trees.
Yeah, but POV-wise.
POV-wise, yeah, probably.
Like, Three Trees is great, but also, I don't think the Dogman does anything, like, even worse than Three Trees. Like, he's a good person looking out for his men. He does not partake in, like, abject cruelty. He tries to do right, but he's not trying to save the world. He's just trying to save his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately do it in a somewhat humane way. Follow.
Yeah, he's not a in relative to the other characters.
He's not
Einstein
bad.
Would say he's generally relatively not the worse than them. I think he'd exactly say that.
Yeah, no, it's enjoyable. So
yeah,
it's weird. But he's not as interested. Like, what would be his want and need?
Wants to save his friends.
He wants to survive.
Survive.
And he does.
Hey, friends, we got this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gets it.
Yeah, that's not much. Maybe courage. Like, because he definitely doubts himself quite a bit. And ultimately, he's surprised when they put him in charge. But.
Oh, yeah.
He's a very competent
leader. Learns a little
bit
about leadership. Yeah. But I'd agree with you. As far as all the characters, he's the least fleshed out.
I just like him as a vehicle.
It's totally fine there. And I'd say to get to my one, if you'd notice, this is my lowest character score of the three books, which typically goes up for people. I think I got to say, great characters. However, the thing that was a little bit of a downer for me was some of the characters' motivations. I alluded to that earlier.
Okay.
But was just not as wowing as I was expecting for the fantastic character work that Abercrombie does.
Okay.
One of them, for example, would be. I'll give two big examples. Others, I guess, I could get to. But one big example would be Baez and his motivations. He's the villain. I get it. Mm-hmm. His villains was more power and control, from my understanding. And not to be rudimentary about it, because not reductionist is the word. Not to be reductionist of like, okay, technically Lord of the Rings is just like, it's all about temptation, and that's all it is. So I don't mean to say that that's a bad thing, but I guess for the whole reveal we got in the plots of Baez being the mastermind of this just was an unsatisfying motivation for me. So that was one. And any thoughts on that before I move
on to his motivation or the motivation for the story? Like, what do you his character motivation?
The story itself and Baez, where he had this relationship with the daughter of the maker. That's mm-hmm. great. Yeah. But Baez's motivation, I guess, in general was just it was there.
It's generally of he has a grievance with Kalul
yep.
that goes back centuries.
Little beef.
But also he is threatened of like Kalul is bringing an army and Baez.
He wants to maintain power.
Yeah, he doesn't want to die.
Yeah.
And so he manipulates the Union to be able to fight this battle against Kalul.
Yep.
And yeah, we'll see which other character is going to fight next. Like
right.
which other one of Baez's old friends that now hate him is yes. going to fight him.
Yes. And more so Baez, again, he was villain, the vehicle for story, a lot of that too, but more so, more controversial probably, was Glockta.
Really?
Glockta's motivation. And I think it maybe comes down to things I've said earlier, but specifically on Glockta's character, Curtis, who I should have also read what he said about the book as well, because Curtis and I agreed on a portion of this from our Patreon. So I guess my opinion on it, and I don't want to speak for him too, but I think he agrees. But my opinion on it is Glockta's motivation in the end, we know his character is being moved by, doesn't want to lose, wants to win. It's always very, very clear. And there was this question being asked since page one or chapter one of Blade itself of why do I do this? Why do I do this? And the answer that he comes to is satisfactory, but didn't wow me of where he essentially says he does this for amusement at a certain sake, which kind of gets across this sense of it continues the cynical theme, and it also gives a, maybe nihilism isn't the word, because technically, if meaning is what you make of it, amusement is his meaning. So his meaning, why he keeps going forward, is why not? I'm on Earth, I'm crippled, but why? It's either, I guess, kill myself or live on. He decides to live on. And which is, I'm not disappointed by it. I'm just going, okay, that makes sense as your motivation. And I guess if for being hyped up that much, I went, okay.
I mean, for the most part, it's that he can't stand losing.
Yep.
And if he's ever going to go out, it's going to be on his terms. And he hates how other people, like, he won't go out on someone else's terms. So he had, even though what does he really have to fight for?
Mm-hmm.
It, a lot of it is his pride and his will. He has just a strong sense of will of I'm going to win. No one's going to beat me.
But then lower than that too, because yes, it is, he wants to win is constantly his character, definitely established. And then there's that end scene where he's going to, the war's over. He's up on top and he goes back to Salt. And there's the torture scene at the very end of Glockta, and now what's his name, Ruse from the beginning, that comes, remember Ruse in the scene, to give some context, comes back to kill Glockta at the very end, and then Glockta's like, just do it, end my life, and Ruse just can't do it. Okay, so now they're together and they go down, and I know Glockta's there and confronts Salt, doesn't need to do it, everything's kind of over, and when going to torture Salt, doesn't need more information, nothing out of him, goes to torture him, and is kind of asking himself, why do I do this? And it comes in the answer of, we do this for our amusement. Like, doesn't need to torture him. Like, deep down, Glockta is evil. Just a bad person. Yeah. And even as much as we get his inner monologue and going like, kind of, because we're looking through his eyes, you can root for him and hope for him in some ways.
It's a part that he doesn't really admit to himself until then is,
yeah,
he enjoys it. And part of it is him torturing Salt is him is rubbing his win in his enemy's face.
Yeah.
Like, just that sensation of being able to show that you won.
Yep.
Is amusing to him. But yeah. Not a good person. But incredibly funny. So I guess that makes him great because he's funny.
And what'd you think of Pharaoh?
Tragic. But ultimately, we don't get too much of her POV. We get a little bit of her.
Okay.
But we get proportional. You know what I mean? If she was a main character, I'd be disappointed. But the fact that she was a side main character, she's important for the plot. She's important for other characters. She's more just tragic. I enjoyed her scenes. I enjoy her as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time she's on page, she's pretty funny in her just outrageously angry way. And then, of course, her dealing with Logan and finally them coming back together again. But after she's already handled the seed, like, it's corrupted her now. So now she has lost whatever connection she had with Logan. Tragic.
Mm.
Sad to see. And just final nail in the coffin type deal. But I enjoyed it. If she was a much larger character, I would be disappointed, though.
That's very fair. Yeah. Because more on the one note scale with her.
Yeah, exactly.
And didn't need to be more. Served her purpose. I guess maybe, okay, still amazing characters. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about it. It's one of the best parts about these books. Yeah. But something with, I guess, the Glock, the motivation of wanting to win, not lose, and like that amusement portion and others. Maybe one thing I would have been more satisfied in the end of who these characters are was, you know, the whole play when you have two conflicting loves or you have two conflicting wants. Mm-hmm. I guess in a story where you have the whole thing that happens when the badass Logan Nine Fingers, everybody fears. However, the feared is even more feared than the Bloody Nine. So it kind of sets up this enemy to Logan Nine Fingers in comparison. Mm-hmm. So the contrast between the two of, you know how badass the Bloody Nine is, or Logan Nine Fingers is before he turns into Bloody Nine. Mm-hmm. And then you see an opponent that's even more feared. And that builds up the opponent. I guess some way in with some of these characters, with Glockta having this want, maybe if he was tested in the end, because all characters are, hey, are you tested, and what is your what is your conviction? We talked about this in characters. Are you convicted in your want and what you need to learn, etc.? With Glockta, I feel like if he was tested even more with his ability to win or lose, for example, maybe a conflicting emotion could have been,
to some degree. I mean, he does come through. He does risk himself for partly. He does risk himself for Artie. Of he sticks his neck out for
that's
her.
My point. No, that's the point I'm getting at. Is that,
and then also going, hey, I think they're like going to destroy the city.
Yeah,
I'm actually going to go after them.
That,
he risks himself. So there is
that's my point, because with Artie, you show he does risk himself for Artie, and there's something else there. We see some of that hope, the glimmer of hope that I know others see in this book. I would have loved it if we see he has this soft spot with Ida in the previous book and with Artie. If a torture scene happens where he has to test, hey, how much does he really love this for amusement and want to win so bad? Where he was tested to choose between a sort of love for Artie, or an even more tragic of he chooses torture and the amusement and the point of this book of that tragic failed hero's arc even more so and grounds you deeper. Because I don't know, a scene where this wouldn't happen in this exact order, but Artie Mm-hmm. Let's say she's in a situation where she needs to be tortured, and he has to decide whether to torture her. You know, does he choose
love, or does he choose winning?
Yes. And I would have loved to see it tested with something that we know Glockta is also, but he ends up getting a bit of that and also still continuing his. So I guess something with that motivation would have just been more impactful that way. With that being said, still amazing characters.
Yeah, no, so. I love these characters. And I especially really like the side characters quite a bit. Not in the sense of, oh, they all had great character arcs, but it's just they were well displayed. There's quite a few, all of the Northmen, I think, were some of the best side characters. Like, Northmen stuck out to me. I love the whole crew. Like, Black Dow is just impressionable. Tall, not in this one, but Three Trees.
We talk about presence. West. What do you think about West?
I really like West.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of just his. It's weird seeing him among the Northmen and then among the Union and how much he actually gets along with the Northmen, which. To me, it seems that the Northmen's culture is very much a meritocratic system, despite like all of their savagery. But it really comes down to who's the best. That's who leads. Whoever's the best at killing and leading the group. And it's not even just the best at killing, because they're not even that simple. Like, that would be more barbaric. It's the sense of who's the best leader. And that involves many different aspects. That's who leads. That's who's competent. And that's Colonel West. His entire life is the only way he's been able to climb the ladders because he's competent. And everyone else around in the Union climbs because of their social status.
Mm.
So it's enjoyable seeing him with the Northmen and how well he gets along with them. Also his darker side of rage, you know. So that's also great to see. You'll love to see how much of a savage he really is.
You know his best scene in this book. Do you remember?
Name it off.
The scene where he is now in charge. And context for people who haven't read it in a while, where Jizal becomes king because Baez had this whole plan to make the Jizal bastard king and all along. Now that Jizal is king of the Union, he appoints West as the
High Marshal?
High Marshal, I believe. Yeah. Counselor or High Marshal's that.
Counselor of War. Something like that.
Something like that. Appoints him to the head of the army stuff. And so that happened because the prince in the previous book died. And with Prince Ladisar dead, it was now a faction between Burr. Burr died.
Yes.
Burr died. And since Burr died, this book, with Burr dead, it was either Corroy or Polder. And they hated each other, had to take lead. One of them was going to get it. Turns out West gets it. And to get these two people who hated each other, he has a chapter in there where he decides to tell both of them, like, hey, Croy, I'm talking to Croy, Polder over here, I trust him way more than I trust you. I trust him so much more than I trust you, Croy. In fact, he's a better man in many ways than you. But there's one thing I disagree with him on, and that's how much, that's his thoughts are... That his opinion on you is the thing that I disagree on. But are you remembering this scene at all?
Yes.
Where he plays with each of them. He tells Croy and he tells Polder the opposite thing, saying, hey, I'm entrusting Polder with the defense of this place. You have to prove yourself to see if, I think that's how it went. He said, I agree with Polder on everything except for except for when it comes to you, Croy, and vice versa. Polder, I agree with Croy and everything except when it comes to you. Like, he thinks to get rid of you, but I'm giving you this chance. So he tells each of them that the other person in his head is the better, like, he basically tells them straight up, saying, I don't like you as much as I like the other guy. You have to prove yourself. And so he gets them both to kind of vie for his approval. And so he gets these two squabblers to instantly just get behind Wes, and it showed some of his intelligence and how not just, oh, how did he climb up the ranks in the ladder in this meritocracy? How did he actually get it through merit? You see a clear example of where he got it through merit, of he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He was able to pull that off. So
he knows how to lead an army and actually get squabbling commanders actually to get in line and work toward a common goal.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he's actually the competent commander.
Yep.
And yeah, I love to see that, but I will say my favorite scene is seeing Logan's fight through his eyes. Was enjoyable. Because, again, now that we've seen because I think we only see the Bloody Nine once every book, except in the third book we get it a few more times. Yep. We get it, I think, three times.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if in Before the Hang, we got it twice, but maybe not.
I don't think. I think we only get it
when they're
once
when they're
underground.
Underground, and they fell off the precipice of that. Yeah,
but in this one we get it. So we get the Bloody Nine first at the scene where they're all trapped in the north.
Yeah,
by Bethod's men, and he kills the child. He kills the son, and then you get to see it again when they all attack Adwa together, and he kills Tull. And then you get to see it. No, sorry. Wrong order. Right? He fights Fenris the Feared. Then we see it in Adwa where he kills Tull.
Yes, because he didn't come down to Adwa until after the North was. Yes. Yeah.
So we get to see it those three times, which badass every time, but.
You got more of it.
I love. You needed to see it through other people's eyes to see the terror and just him looking like. He's known Logan a little bit, sitting next to him and going, okay, look, I've seen some things. I get it. I've been with these Northmen now. I get it now. I'm more seasoned. And he looks at Logan and goes like, oh, no. I don't know anything anymore.
Yeah.
So that's enjoyable. I loved his – and also him sort of cheating maybe in the whole scene to help Logan. But, yeah.
Fair
that was
nice.
Good.
Very nice, yes. So, do you have anything else on characters, or do you have any other thoughts to say?
Yeah, they all floored me.
Amazing.
Yeah, loved them.
Plot time.
Plot.
What'd you give plot out of 5 stars?
4.75.
2.5. Disappointing.
The ending.
Yep.
Basically, all stuff. I thought this was. I'm giving this a lot of credit for the entire trilogy. I thought it was just well. You know, this is the ending of the trilogy, and I thought it just well planned out of. With Baez being the ultimate villain, I thought it was really well set up. Everything with Logan, I thought, was spectacular plotting of setting it up and making me believe that, oh, actually, Logan is a different kind of man. Like, other people are seeing the wrong side of him. And then by the end going, oh, yeah, no, Logan is a monster. He shouldn't be in charge. He shouldn't be trusted by his friends. That's great. I love how well that was set up. The everything with the Giselle, perfect plotting. Of you go now back to book one and you go, oh, of course, all the stuff with again, this all the things I liked with Baez manipulating the duel in the first book mm-hmm. now just makes so much more sense of the why. Why was he doing this? What puppet master? Like, I get that he's a puppet master, but why? What is his plans? Loved it. Loved everything to do with Baez being the villain, how he manipulated Giselle, and I love Logan's all that. And then I enjoy all the stuff, the minutia plot details of Glockta. Overall, Glockta's story was enjoyable, but yeah, it doesn't have that like surprise turn at the end of shocking me. He wins. Glockta wins no matter what.
Got what he wanted.
He gets what he wants. Yep. Glockta's not a loser. He always wins. He always comes out on top. And it's enjoyable to see. But yeah, I love the plot.
The plot was set up here with we had battle in the north to go down, and we had battle in Adwa from the Gurkish, yes. So we had two big battles to happen, and it looks like the way it was structured, we had by the midpoint, the north battle was over. Your midpoint of the novel is where Logan fights Feared, and then they decide to come down and how West decides to come down to save and help Adwa against the Gurkish. And so a lot of battles, the pacing in this book, did you like how fast paced it was? It could definitely, I think that was it a breakneck pace or to you, was it just more of a fast paced?
It's a fast paced book. I don't think it was breakneck.
There was enough moments. There was enough.
Oh yeah. There's plenty of great moments of everything with, I think Giselle definitely had some really good calm moments. Same thing.
Yeah.
I think each character got some great moments of calm to prep you. So everything with Giselle, new, you know, becoming a new king and all stuff of him trying to be a better king in the more lull moments before battle were great. Logan trying to reintegrate himself into his old friends. Really wonderful to see him in a new group of people who don't know him. He comes off as so much more
wise and competent leader, and then the people that do know him and are afraid of him, and they have every right to be terrified of him and not trust him. It's so different seeing him in his supposed element. Like, that's where he should thrive, but he doesn't.
I loved it. In much the same way, people think they know who we are, but we know each other, and we know the skeletons.
Yeah.
This facade, this, what you're, no.
No.
No. But the person that was closest to Logan, the people closest to him were, knew how much of a terror he was.
Yeah. And then we get to see that proven.
Yeah.
All that to say, I really enjoyed that, how everything came together in the plot for this.
Yep. I didn't enjoy the Baez moment at the end nearly as much. I thought it made the prior stuff make sense, as in this is why Baez manipulated and put all these things together. But the Baez motivation coming in at the end was big villain reveal who wins in the end. And I guess I never felt tense or surprised. And I think that's the two things that would be a good reveal. A good reveal, either I'm surprised by it or there's tension leading up to it. And I didn't feel either of those things throughout the plot. And maybe part of that was I just wasn't as keen of paying attention to, I wasn't invested in the world as a whole because the moving parts didn't matter as much. I'm just going, okay, these characters, where are these characters gonna end up? And so that the thing that tied everything together, Baez being the mastermind, wasn't a shock because Baez was, you know, led up to be, mm-hmm. have this edge, especially from book two. And also, the way the plot revealed itself, if you had Baez's motivations from the beginning, it's a completely different series and book. Would that create for more tension? Maybe. I don't know. But I guess the reveal itself was just not a... Did it surprise you? Because maybe surprise is the wrong word. It's just more so it makes it make sense.
And
it
didn't have surprise or tension.
Is it a nice bow that puts on the story?
Yeah. It's more of a... I keep saying delicious disappointment, and that's what it is. It's that.
I agree. It is a disappointment. It's
no, but it's just like it's bitter.
Yeah,
it's just deliciously bitter.
Yep.
Of, you know, like, you think, okay, yeah, he's really flawed, and then it just keeps going further and further. Like, oh no, actually, he's probably the villain. Oh, he really the villain.
Yeah.
And then just seeing, oh, it's all so fruitless. It's all hopeless. That was a deliciously wonderful emotion to have. I'm saying the word deliciously a lot this video.
I don't like the way you look when you're saying
it. Yeah, I had a very small dinner today. I did not...
Yeah.
I probably didn't eat enough today.
I haven't ate in a while, too.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Do you want to go eat somewhere after this? It's coming on 10:30 p.m. I don't know if...
We can go to a diner.
Actually?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's at a Silver Diner. Yeah.
I'd be down.
There we go.
Okay. Decided. Okay. Okay, so... To not reiterate, the ending is what disappointed me.
Yeah, we've
talked about it enough. As much as I liked the scenes in between, I just the ending.
Fair enough. I thought it was a well put together plot, and I liked how it came together as the ending. That's why I do think it is super spectacular.
Makes sense. And I think maybe to add a little bit of a more context or surety for what you think about this. What was the biggest, the payoff moment for you? So battle's happening in Audrey Wood. What do you remember as the biggest payoff you got? The climax of the book. Was there a moment that had you, above these, the Fenris, the Logan fight against the Feared was more midpoint. Was there that third act boom that had you going as much as the earlier book did?
Talking, if I'm limiting it to the Baez stuff, which is the bigger plot moments, I do really like the plot moments of Baez finally using the seed against the Gurkish and just absolutely destroy, like, one, like, you get the aspect of, oh no, he knows that him opening the seed, like, you're killing so many of the Union soldiers and civilians, like, the amount of civilian casualty he's allowing is insane and absolutely terrible way to die. Not a quick suffer, it's a suffering death that he's giving to a lot of innocent people, and then he wipes them all out, and then the amount of innocent people he caught along with it, then you find out the reason why he did it, and then just the feeling of, it wasn't even he's a flawed character that had a decent reason. He's just a hypocrite. Like, he doesn't even he's not even standing up for the three laws. Like, his friend that's with him is also an eater. And so now he's not even against Kalul because, oh, he's betrayed the three laws and he's working with demons. Like, he's also doing the exact same thing. It's not even close.
Yeah.
That moment of, no, he's a complete villain. I really enjoyed that. And then also the mask off moment with between him and Giselle of the manipulation's over. It's now just Giselle keeps pushing, thinking that he's too dense to realize he's being manipulated. And then finally, Baez just like, all right, no, we're not playing around anymore. Like, none of this. You are not in power. I say jump, you tell me how high. That's it. Like, it just puts the fear of God into him.
How do you think this podcast runs?
Oh, when I tell you on high, what happens? Yeah. Well, no, actually, it's the opposite. You have complete control. Editing
your calendar. I'm like,
I think I've had one time that I had like, I put my say of like a thumbnail came across like, hey, here's the thumbnail for the recent video, and I was like, no, I'm fine looking like a fool sometimes. That's a bad image of me. I don't want that on the internet.
Jacob did his best, okay?
He did his best. And he picked a better photo, but it was bad. That was a bad photo. And I've taken some bad photos.
But
yeah, that... Ugh.
But in general, yes, the... you know what? It's more so... You have the... You know what? You are Giselle. You have the aura of control.
People yes, think you're in control. True.
But I'm biased. I'm really like, hey, Rich... Cancel what you're doing at 6 o'clock. We have a meeting.
That is true. You control the calendar.
The man with the calendar.
you are the person behind us. Like, I like to puff up my chest of like, oh yes, democracy is cringe, monarchy, I'm in power control. Like, peasants, I get to decide things. But really, he tells me where to go. Show up at 6 o'clock.
And then I get here and you're like, what are we doing? I'm like, you needed to prepare. And then right before the episode starts, you're like, oh, what's my rating? And then meanwhile, I have all this jargon and I don't even say it in the episode. It's just a bunch of notes that go nowhere.
Isn't that wonderful? I actually use every single one of my notes. You use maybe 30%.
I have
of them.
The plot detailed.
I know.
We're never going to go over it.
See, you waste your time. I am efficient.
Should I read off my notes?
You could try.
The next one says world building.
Now, this one, I will say, I think I've probably put it a little high because I'm factoring in the Baez stuff. I have it at a 4.0. I think it's great, but I'm tempted to lower it. But what did you give it?
2.75, below average.
Yeah. How much do you weigh the history with Baez in this world? Because I really enjoyed the plot with Baez and how much control and manipulation he's had over Adua. Mm. I feel like I'm saying that wrong every time in a different way.
Ardua or Adua or
Adua.
Ottawa.
Ottawa.
Yeah.
It's Ottawa.
Yep.
Yep. We're going to go with
Ottawa. We confirm that from episode two. Or why don't I, book two, not episode two. We're so many episodes.
It's Ottawa. Yep. Anyway. I really enjoy that aspect, but go beyond of the whole aspect with demons and the different cultures. Like, I really enjoy the Northmen, and I like to hate the Union, but do we get much of the Gurkish? No. Like, just general, like, you know, desert slavers basically is all we really get. And they're controlled by the church, you know. So I don't know. There's not that much going for the world itself.
As far as immersion goes, you were immersed, but hey, the history's cool with Baez's control and how he manipulated things. But beyond that, it doesn't sound like a four, just the way you're talking.
Yeah, I know. You it's know? Just, I like that so much. Absent that, I'd give it a much lower score.
Got it.
And so I'm tempted to lower it down to like a 3.75 or a 3.5 type deal.
Fair enough.
I think all the stuff with Baez is really good, and the culture around the Northmen is really enjoyable, and it feels immersive and real.
To give your four
that
more credit,
stuff's great.
What feels the most real is the tone. Tone is how the setting feels. It's very grimdark. The tone is super consistent, and I can see you reading this book feeling immersed by the emotion it gives you, by feeling immersed by, hey, the grim, dark tone, no man or woman is left with anything outside of being morally gray at best. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there feeling a sense of dread, could be the wrong word, a sense of sadness is also the wrong word. What's an in-between of not sad, not happy? Apathy would be a very negative term. So if you had to coin something for what's the feeling it gives you, because grimdark encapsulates the genre.
Demure?
Demure.
I guess.
Maybe. Forlorn.
Ooh, there we go. Yeah.
So it gives you that vibe.
Yeah. Mm. It does pass the vibe check. Yeah.
The very negative vibe
You're
check.
You're right. Great. It's great. It's a great vibe. I'm gonna keep it at the four. There we go. Just for the vibes.
Yep.
I like the vibes.
That is something that it definitely has. It definitely keeps that consistent tone.
I definitely was never sucked out of the world. Really.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think this kind of goes between my other categories as well. But why I think the world itself of why nothing else connected as well. The bias revealers. I just never cared very much about the world. It seemed like a vehicle to the story. It was something to get the characters where they needed to go, and think the North was the North, Ottawa, whatever. The most interesting thing about Ottawa is how the Close Council works and how the factions play against each other, and so the people within them. But I almost credit that more to the characters than I do the world itself. I get the functionality of the world isn't anything crazy, but where it comes to how the book ended and the world aspect, I think that's why I have an encapsulating feel of. I was reading the first law. The characters and prose were always amazing. And I guess I was looking for more of a, hey, hit me with an emotion, hit me with a message. I never cared about the world. And I think even people that love the first law, maybe they'd say the world is the lowest aspect.
I would
assume.
I do think the world gets better as it goes on in the sense of, just by the neck, I don't think I'm spoiling anything talking about Best or Cold in the sense of the world is you start to appreciate the world more because the books are part of the history.
Okay.
And so you go, oh, I see how this stuff mattered and how things are building. And it makes the world feel more alive as the books go on.
Okay.
That's at least my impression from especially Best or Cold. There's so many aspects that are introduced in this trilogy that seems small, but then like, oh, okay, it's actually important, and it fleshes out that world a lot more. And so I think next book will have a lot better world score.
I hope so, because for me, books 1 through 3, the world got worse. Mm-hmm. I think because book 1, the idea of the world and the mysteries that sprouted about with Baez and what is going on in the North and the Gurkish, we hadn't even gotten there yet. And the feeling that I got, and Baez being this whimsical but with an edge type of strange wizard, I hadn't seen that. And the first of the Magi, the one that's thousands of years old, is still here. A lot of that intrigue just had me going, whoa, what's going on in this world? And then slowly, as I got explored more of the world, I realized, oh,
it's exactly what it seems.
It's exactly what it did seem. So it didn't add anything new. And so as I went further and further into the world, I felt less and less enthused to be in it. So, and also, I guess just a grim tone in general can really get that going. But I'm going, okay, he doesn't do a poor job at it, but it has no map. He's not emphasizing the world, okay? And I think he did create a map at one point. I heard some commenter said this, but was told not to include it. Something happened there, but there's no map, -5 stars.
Understood. Mm. That makes sense, actually. Yeah. I respect that decision the most.
Of all the things. That's
no
the one
map,
thing.
-5.
Good. Do you want anything else on that to talk about? Because it's a soft magic system. There's nothing to explore in that way, which can be totally fine.
I do want to mention a pretty funny thing.
Yeah.
And I do know from one of the interviews with Joe Abercrombie of something that was introduced in book one that was just completely dropped throughout the book is Logan's like communication with spirits, and more specifically there was a moment where like Logan had a fire spirit, like kept a fire spirit under his tongue, was able to spit fire using the spirits. Ooh. That was in book one. Completely dropped.
Wait, that wasn't book one, was it?
Yeah, book one abandoned.
He spit fires?
He kept a fire spirit in his mouth, and he spit it out. And it was booked, like, very early chapters when he's in, like, the forest and stuff.
Okay.
And he kept, like,
yeah,
abandoned completely. And he had a plan, and he'd go, like, I just don't think it fits. And so he just dropped that.
I totally forgot about it. I guess it was dropped.
It was dropped, but, like, cool. It was cool in the moment, and it's like, it doesn't fit. He moved on.
Oh, well, let me lower my score.
Okay. I just thought that was a funny aspect of
that. I guess that's how it works as a writer. You can't, some things, by the time you get to that third book, some things stay, some things don't. Tolkien didn't know that Gollum would be such a big part of The Lord of the Rings. Didn't know that the ring would be such a big part of Lord of the Rings. When he was writing The Hobbit, and then he's like, oh, wait a second, I need to now make another chapter, go back to The Hobbit, and add Gollum scenes and the riddle. I need to make it bigger, more important, so that the ring is then alluded to when it comes to Lord of the Rings. So
Yeah.
So he did. Unfortunately, Tolkien didn't plan out 20 years ahead.
He only planned out
17.
Close.
Okay, are you ready for last category?
Probably with a point. Pros. The point we'll actually agree on, huh?
Yes. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I gave mine first. Let's have you go.
We also agreed on characters, pretty much.
Yeah.
4.5 stars. Incredible.
Hey. 4.5 stars. Exactly.
Kumbaya. Spectacular. We agree in the end. There was no disagreements at all.
He's a great writer. The dialogue, top notch. The fight scenes are some of the best that you're gonna get in fantasy. Everything with Logan Ninefingers, amazing. I also love Farrah's fight scenes of how just accurate and feral she is, as the name suggests.
Oh.
Yeah.
Connecting the dots.
Yeah. but yeah, all of the torture scenes with Glockta are just so visceral and real. Like, oh, God. Grosses you out. But then but the fact that he has the funniest inner monologue is great. I love all of the best prose moment for me in this entire book is Logan's inner monologue finally getting interrupted. It almost seems like the narrator of the book is annoyed with Logan. He keeps like, say one thing for Logan Ninefingers. Say that he's, and it was cut off. Just thrown off. He's like, what? Oh, when was that happen? He was punched or something in the middle of that in his inner monologue.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if the narrator was, like, the narrator became omniscient to him, but it was just more something happened to Logan.
Well, I think part of it is that's what the inner monologue
is the character.
Seems like a narrator, but it's not a narrator.
It's a third person of, it's literally Logan.
It's Logan literally saying it about himself.
Say one thing about myself. But, yeah.
Which just makes him weird. Yeah. Even more weird than, you know, being possessed by a demon, maybe. I don't know. I feel like that's what it should be, but who knows with Joe. It could just be him.
You don't know. But, incredible fight scenes. His descriptions. Yeah, you can't not understand what's happening around you. He makes it so your head imagines exactly what he's trying to visualize. Mm-hmm. And then even on top of all that, he has some pretty cool sayings, not the idiosyncrasies of the characters, but some life sayings about things in general, which I have a list here.
Oh, you have the notes?
I'm going to use some of my notes.
Good.
Okay. There's
someone's
some prep.
Got it.
All right. So I want you to rate on a 1 to 5 star scale of how cool the quote is and how much you think about it and go, that was nice quote. Okay. I'm going to put that on my bumper sticker. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Proof is boring. Proof is tiresome. Proof is an irrelevance. People would far rather be handed an easy lie than a difficult truth, especially if it serves their own purposes.
3.5. That's a good one.
Good quote.
I've heard it's well written, but I know the sentiment before. Yeah.
Got it. That's the trouble with ambition. It's easy to forget when you're always looking upwards that the only way down from the dizzying heights is a long drop.
I like that one more.
Mm-hmm.
4.5.
Ooh.
That's a better one.
Nice. Okay. I said this earlier in the episode, but I'll repeat it.
Okay.
Truly, life is the misery we endure between disappointments.
I don't agree with it, but it's a well-written scene for especially a certain character.
Yeah.
So, another 4.
Wow, great.
That one, yeah.
Okay. I got 3 more.
You got 3 more.
Yep. I have learned all kinds of things from my many mistakes. The one thing I never learn is to stop making them.
That's a fun one. 4.5.
Wow, pretty high. I went a little lower on that one. I think you went a little too ambitious.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Rules are for children. This is war, and in war, the only crime is to lose.
Better.
Mm.
Four.
Four, nice. And last but not least, plans seem to fall apart the more you lean on them.
Five. It just works so well. Like,
simple.
You've heard that kind of saying before, but the way it's said and so succinctly is so great.
Economy of words.
Economy.
Thoughtful sentence. Nice.
Yeah, just the little twist of the more you lean on it works well. I love it.
He has a lot of those one-liners that are just, or those one-liners or those one paragraphs.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, maybe 1% of them. It's, there's so many, so many great one-liners.
There's plenty more. And all that prose that he does, so for your nice quips or your character idiosyncrasies or how the characters speak in the dialogue.
The character voice is top-notch out of really any writer. That's one of the things he does best among, like, all of his writing styles. He has some of the best character voice where you don't need the character. You don't need to actually say, oh, who said that line, really? Or who's in this chapter? You give him a few sentences and, like, oh, that's Glockta. Oh, that's Logan. You completely get it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Awesome. That was it. Well, okay, we did pretty good on that. We did pretty good.
You know, not as bad as I thought we were going to be.
Not as bad. You know, it felt long because I'm hungry.
We're going to go get something to eat.
Something delicious.
Mm. Mm. Say one thing for Austin. Say that he can put down a lot of food.
I do eat a lot.
You eat a lot.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we don't live together anymore because you would have eaten
midnight
me out
pasta.
You would have eaten me out of house and home.
All right. What did you all think about Last Argument of Kings? We talked about it for a long time. What do you think about it? And then also the future books of the standalones, and that we will continue. I think I'll take a pause from the First Law personally for a bit. I gotta finish other books, and then I'll come back after
probably in the new year.
That's a good way to
sometime in the new year we'll get back to it.
Yeah. Okay. And once again, we started this with thanking my bully Maj. Maj, thanks for having me read this. And I'm glad I could disappoint you with this review because you deserve it.
Good. Thanks, Maj.
This is all just payback against Maj.
Haha. Screw you, Maj.
All right. See y'all next episode.
Bye.
Hola mi gente, Rosalind Sanchez here from He Said, Ella Dijo. And although I like drama in my telenovelas, when it comes to real life, I prefer a drama-free casa. Thanks to Fabuloso, its remarkable lavender scent lingers like a longing glance. And with 2 times more active ingredients to take the drama out of any mess, you'll be shouting gracias. Fabuloso's 2x concentrator formula provides 2x more active cleaning ingredients versus non-concentrated Fabuloso original. Use as directed.